I'll just finish one the last sentence over here in the parak, just to finish it off. It says, "V'yotzu Yisrael miMitzrayim eleim kol tuv mimin brachis," and the Jews came out of Mitzrayim filled with all different types of good brachas, all the different types of good things, the blessings. Bizochra davar shenema l'Avram, sort of to as a cum, as a fulfillment of what it was said to Avram Avinu by the Bris Ben Abesorim, that Hashem said to him, "V'gam es agoy asher yavaydu don anochi," also the nation that made you work, I'm also going to judge them. Then you're going to go out with a lot of property. So that's why the Jews went out with kol tuv mimin brachas, all different types of good things from brachas, which is the same lashon that the Medrash opens up with. We're going to see earlier in Perek Mem Beis. All right, kol tuv. Perek Mem Ches. We're holding in the middle of the perek, towards the end of the perek, actually. Last week we discussed how the five fingers, each finger is merames on a different type of geula, the geula of Noach and the geula of Mitzrayim, Vuchayis v'chulu. Now we're going to discuss another nekuda that has to do with the number five. First of all, Stam, I just want to remind ourselves, in the introduction here we mentioned a story about Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Shua. When they were little kids, they went into the Beis Medrash on the day that nobody else showed up, and they said, "No, we have to learn." But they're like, we don't know anything because we're little kids. So what are we going to talk about?" So they said, "Oh, we'll darshan the extra letters in the Aleph Beis, because they only knew Aleph Beis. So we have, there's five letters in the Aleph Beis that are doubled, right? Mem, Nun, Tzadik, Pei, Chof. There's a regular Mem and a Mem, or Mem Sofit. A regular nun and an end of nun, a regular tzaddik and an end of tzaddik." So they darshaned it over there. So here also, Pirkei Dabbaliyaz is going to darshan the letters that are repeated in the Aleph Beis. Stam, it's interesting that Rabbi Leo Mi Izmir, in V'loy Oyed Ella, appears on Pirkei Dabbaliyaz, he writes how these five things that we're going to discuss now are connected the five things that we discussed last week, of the five fingers of the hand of a Kaddish Baruch Hu. Each one he has all explanation how it fits in, but I don't want to get into it. Let's stop and just read it. Stop. Hebelezer Aymer, Hebelezer says, Chamesh Ois Yais Shenichvalu Batayra Ba'Ois Yais Kulam Beseda Geula. The five letters which are repeated in the Torah, in the letters, Ba'Ois Yais, in the letters, Kulam Beseda Geula. In those letters is the secret to the geula. So we said there's five: Mem, Nun, Tzadik, Pei, and Chaf. Right? That Chazal tells Menatzpach. The Gemara in Maseches Megillah talks about these letters. Here we're going to darshan them, the Radal points out, in the order that they first appear in the Aleph Beis. So we're not going to darshan it as Mem, Nun, Tzadik, Pei, Chaf. We're going to darshan it as Chaf, Mem, Nun, Pei, Tzadik. Okay. Chaf, chaf. What's chaf, chaf? Bay niga Avram Avinu mi Ur Kasdim. With the letters chaf, chaf, that's how Avram Avinu had Ula from Ur Kasdim, and he went there to Sol. Shneimar, it says in the pasuk, lech lecha me'artzecha. Go from your land. So there's a double chaf. So that we see that Avram Avinu's geula came with a chaf. Mem, bay niga Yitzchak Avinu mi'ad plishim. With the letter mem, or mem. The letter Mem, that's how Yitzchak Avinu was nigal from the Plishtim. He was saved from the Plishtim. Shenema, because it says in the Pasuk, after Yitzchak had an unfriendly encounter with the Plishtim, they said to him, Lech mi imanu, go away from us, ki atzamta mimenu ma'id, because he became very strong or very rich or whatever, and they didn't like the fact that he was so matzliach, so they sent away Yitzchak. So his gula came with the Mem over there. Lech mei imanu kiyotzamta mimenu me'oid. How many mems is that? That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 mems in those few words. So you see that came with a mem. Nun, by nigal Yaakov Avinu miyad Esav. With the letter Nun, that's how Yaakov Avinu was saved from Esav. Shenemar, because it says in the Pasuk, when Yaakov Avinu davened that he should be saved from Esav, so he said to Hashem, Hatzileni no miyad ochi miyad Esav. Please save me from my brother, from Esav. Last week he spoke about what the double lashon of from my brother from Esav is. Okay, but here we see he has a nun hatzilei ni no two nuns. So you see that the nun was the letter that Yaakov had his geula from Esav. Pei, the double pei. Boy nigla v'sinim in Mitzrayim. That was how our forefathers were redeemed from Mitzrayim with the double pei. Shenamar pokoid pokadeti aschem. Hashem said pokoid pokadeti aschem. Parshas, it means I've surely remembered you. Remembering, I have remembered you. Pokoid pokadeti, pei. Tzadik. Boy also the kodesh baruch hu ligal yisrael b'seif machlus revius. That with that letter, with the tzaddik, that's how Hashem is destined to redeem Klal Yisrael at the end of the fourth kingdom. I mean, at the end of when the time for Rome, Golas Edom, is up, Hashem is going to redeem us with the tzaddik. Hashem is going to say, I have made grown a growth. Meaning it's talking about the gula. The gula is going to grow. Shenema, it says a pasuk in Zechariah, Hine ish. Behold, there is a man, Tzemach Shemoy. His name is Tzemach. Umitachtav Yitzmach. And from under him, everything is going to grow out. Things are going to grow because of him. Meaning Mashiach. Ubanas Heichal Hashem. And he's going to build the sanctuary of Hashem. And some of Farshim said, in the name of Mashiach is going to be Tzemach. That's the name. Okay. So we have, basically we said these five letters, of course, the five letters that are doubled in the Aleph Beis, correspond to five different types of geula that happen in Klal Yisrael or are going to happen in Klal Yisrael. Right there. V'lai nimsu ha'ayis yayis ela la'avram avinu. These letters were only given over to Avram Avinu. V'avram Avinu misaran li'Yitzchak. Avram Avinu passed them to Yitzchak. V'Yitzchak misaran li'Yaakov. Yitzchak gave it over to Yaakov. Yaakov misaran li'Yosef. Yosef passed it over to Yosef. Yosef misaran le'echav. Yosef gave it over to his brothers, and his brother, the Asher ben Yaakov, Asher the son of Yaakov, Yosef's brother, masar seida geula le'Serach bas Asher. He passed it over to Serach bas Asher. Pashtus Serach bas Asher was the daughter of Asher, but some of you might know that the Targum in Pashtus Pinchas says that she wasn't really the daughter of Asher; she was the adopted daughter. And the Sefer Yashar says that Asher married someone who was the name of, who was previously married to someone in Malkiel, and he died, and then Asher married her, but she had from her first marriage Sarah. So that's why it says in the pasuk, "V'shem bas Asher Sarah." She wasn't really the daughter of Asher; that was her name. They called her the daughter of Asher, but she wasn't really the. Some of Farshim say that Sarah bas Asher wasn't really a daughter of Asher. Okay, but Kopanim, they gave her the Seira Geula. Ukishaba Moshe ve'Aaron. Eitzel Zikne Yisrael, when Moshe and Aaron came in front of the elders of Klal Yisrael, v'asu ha'isayis le'enehem, and they did the different signs in front of the elders of Klal Yisrael, the shtick with the stick turning into the snake, and the shtick with the hand turning into tsaras, and maybe I think they even did the blood, all these signs that Moshe and Aaron did for to show the, right? They did it also for the Zikne Yisrael, I think, no? The Torah says, yeah.
Show them the signs. It didn't say explicitly. It said
show them the signs. But the signs. I talk about these signs, I think. At least someone says it, I think. So they show them these signs, and Moshe Rabbeinu was basically saying, you know, time for the gula, right? To prepare for the gula. Halchu zikne Yisrael etzel zikin osam serach bas Asher. So the elders of Klal Yisrael went to their elder, the really old lady, serach bas Asher, v'amrula, and they said to her, bo ish. They went to her, they said to her, a man came and he did these certain signs in front of our eyes, he did such and such, and he's claiming that he's bringing the geula. So you know, what are we supposed to do? They're asking her eitzah, kilu. Amra lahem, so she said to them, ein beis ha'ilu mamash. There's no mamashais to these signs. There's no reality to them, no actuality to them. I don't know why you gave me a funny look. Amalah, she said, they said to her, did he not say, did Moshe Rabbeinu not say that Hashem said, Pokayt Pokadati Aschem? So she said, first of all, the signs that they did, that's nothing. They said, he said, Pokayt Pokadati Aschem. So Amr Lahem, so she said to them, ah, he said, Pakrit Pakadit Yisrael, who ha'isha osid ligalis Yisrael min Mitzrayim? Ah, he is the man that's going to destined to take the Jew, to redeem the Jews from Mitzrayim. Shekach shamati me'aba, pei upei. This is what, because that's what I heard from my father. Pei upei. The lashon of the geula is going to be with two peis. Pei upei. Shema pakoid pakadit Yisrael. So Sarah Basasha said, this is the real deal over here. Miad heminu ha'am belikim of Moshe. Immediately, the nation believed in Hashem and in Moshe Rabbeinu. Shneema, because it says in the pasuk, va'ya'amein ha'am. The nation believed. Va'yishmeu, and they heard. Ki pokar Hashem es bnei Yisrael, that Hashem has redeemed or remembered Klal Yisrael. Okay, so there's a few interesting points to speak about over here about this whole thing with the different. The signs, and they went to the Sarach Bas Osher. The first thing is first is like this. The Gemara in Maseches Sota and Daf Yud Gimel Amud Aleph says that when Moshe Rabbeinu was on, when they were on their way out of Mitzrayim, so Moshe Rabbeinu was going to go and get the Aron of Yosef to take out with him. He went to go take the coffin of Yosef with him out of Mitzrayim, but he didn't know where it was. So Gemara says he went to Sarach Bas Osher to ask her, where is it? So Taisus over there, Maseches Sota asks the question. Taisus is, why did Moshe ben Dafko go to Sarach Bas Osher? Why didn't he go to Mochir or Ya'ir ben Menashe, who were also, you know, from that early generation, they were still alive. Chazal tell us that Ya'ir and Mochir, they were from the people that came into Eretz Yisrael, because they were older than 60 at the time of the Chid Egel. And so they went into Eretz Yisrael. They weren't killed in the Midbar. And even the Chazal tell us that in the time of Yeshua, Yoyer was still alive. And when it says in the Sefer Yeshua, it says by the battle of Ai, so it says that the people from Ai killed 36 Jewish soldiers. So Chazal tells us it doesn't really mean 36. It really means Yoyer ben Menashe, who is equal to 36, which is Rav of the Sanhedrin. Because he was so chashav, he was equal to Rav of the Sanhedrin. Right, so we know Machir and Yair were Chash people, and they were still alive at that point, and they lived even longer then. So why did Moshe Rabbeinu go to Sarach Bas Osher to ask her where was Yosef buried? He could have asked Yair and Machir. That's Taisus' kasha. The Taisus answers, because the Seida Geula was given over to Sarach Bas Osher. So apparently that the way I understand it, just like we're saying over here in the Medrash, that she was the one who knew that the Geula is supposed to be with Pei, so too she was also the one who they gave over to her the knowledge of where Yosef is going to be buried, so that when the time comes, she'll tell Moshe Rabbeinu where it is. The Taisus Shantz in Maseches Sota says a different teretz to this question. Taisus Shantz in Maseches Sota says, it's not that Moshe Rabbeinu Dafka went to ask Sarach Bas Osher. It's just that he was going to go try to find where Yosef was buried, and it happened to be that the first person that he met was Sarach Bas Osher, so he asked her. But Taisus Shantz is saying that if he would have met Yair ben Menashe, let's say, then he would have asked him. It just happened to be that he asked Sarach Bas Osher, not Yair ben Menashe. That's what Taisus Shantz over there says. Interestingly, there's a Sefer Binyan Ariel from Rav Shol of Amsterdam, who's a grandson of the Rebbe Reb Heschel, in Binyan Ariel in Parshas Bishalach. So he says, he sort of asks this question, and then he doesn't really say such a stark answer, but he just says that, well, when Moshe Rabbeinu was trying to get the coffin of Yosef, so everyone else was busy getting Bezos Mitzrayim, getting their vessels and all kinds of gold and silver from the Egyptians. So Moshe Rabbeinu didn't want to ask somebody else where Yosef is buried, because, you know, everyone else is busy getting their treasures, so he didn't want to stop them from getting their treasures. So instead, he asked Sarach Bas Osher. He didn't explain, doesn't really explain, but maybe Sarach Bas Osher was busy getting the treasures. So for some reason, he's assuming that she wasn't. But it's interesting to note like this. The Radal asks a question like this. Says, okay, fine. Like Taisus' answer was, oh, so they gave the Seida Geula Dafka to Sarach Bas Osher, so that's why Moshe Rabbeinu went to ask Sarach Bas Osher where she was buried, and etc. But the Radal asks over here, but why did they give the Seida Geula Dafka to Sarach Bas Osher? There were other people from that generation also alive, so why Dafka her? So the Radal has two answers. He says, first of all, because Serach Bas Osher, they knew that Serach Bas Osher was going to have a special Arichas Yomim, because Yaakov Avinu gave her a bracha when she was the one that revealed that Yosef is still alive, so he gave her a bracha that she's going to live for a long life. And Chazal even tell us that she ended up going into Gan Eden alive. She never actually died. That's a Mesechus Derech Eretz Zuta. So that's why they dafka chur, because they knew that she'll still be alive whenever the Gula is supposed to happen. The other answer, the Radal says, I don't know how much it really answers the question, but the Radal says that they didn't want to give the Seder Geula to Bnei Ephraim, or because the Bnei Ephraim were the ones that left early. And we see that they're not they're not trusted with knowing this type of knowledge. So we didn't want to give it to them. And then also to Bnei Menashe, they didn't want to give it because all Bnei Yosef is like one category. But he doesn't really explain why they didn't give it to anyone else. He just says, why not Bnei Ephraim and Bnei Menashe? But he doesn't explain, okay, maybe there was nobody else alive at that time. I don't know, because Tezis' whole question was from Machir and Yoyer, but maybe talk there was no one else in that generation. What?
Yeshua. What tribe was he from?
Yeshua's from Ephraim.
So then he's out, and then according to that answer.
Yeah.
But he could have.
Right, in theory. He was already alive at this point, right? How old was Yeshua? I mean, you could figure out how old Yeshua was.
Passed away when he was 110.
He passed away when he was 110, and he was
40 years of desert.
14 years he was a ruler. So 110 minus 14 minus 40 in the desert, whatever that is.
How many years did it take him to conquer Israel?
14 years. 7 years to conquer and 7 years to be Malik.
Divide, conquer and divide.
Conquer and divide, yeah.
14 plus 40, what do you have? 54?
54. So 100 minus 54 is?
46.
So Yeshua was about.
From 110.
For 110, yeah.
No.
Oh, 100.
You said
100.
110.
But now
so it's 56. 56.
It says, may have Esam Shab.
56.
Yeah,
right.
Years.
Like Yosef was also 110 years old.
Yeah, Hashem took it away because he purposely took a longer time.
Right, that's what they say.
It's
Midrashim, I think. Okay, so that's one Nakuda. Another Nakuda is like this. We're talking about that there was a certain Messiah that says that Hashem is going to redeem Klal Yisrael with a double lashon of pei, pokadit, pokadati. Yeah? So, the question is like this. Once Serach Bas Osher realized that Moshe Rabbeinu said this lashon of pokadit, pokadati, so then she said, oh, he's the guy that's going to bring the Geula, and then everyone believed him. Yeah? So the question is like this. We know that there was some sort of Messiah floating around that Hashem is going to redeem Klal Yisrael with these words, Pokeit Pokadati. So, how could they trust Moshe Rabbeinu that maybe he heard about such a Messiah, so he used those words, because those are the magic words. How do we know that he's really coming to bring the Geula? This is the Ramban's Kasha. This is the Ramban and Parsha Shmoyis' Kasha. So, I think that speaking back about what we said from Taisus in Saita and Taisus Shans in Sechel Saita, so Taisus asked, why did Moshe Rabbeinu ask Dafka Serach Bas Osher and not anyone else? Right? So we have two answers. One answer was because the Soida Geula was given to Serach Bas Osher. That's what Taisus says. Taisus Shans says, because that was the first person that he met. Right? So according to Taisus, it seems that nobody else had this Soida Geula. It was only given to Serach Bas Osher. She was the only one who knew about it. According to Tesla Shans, other people knew about it. It just happens to be that she was the first one that he bumped into. So I think that the Ramban's Kasha only starts if you learn like Tesla Shans, that other people had this Messiah. If you learn like Tesla, so only Serach Bas Osher had it. So what's the question? Maybe he just heard that these words were supposed to be the magic words. Nobody knew about it. That's what I think. But the Ramban asks this question in Parsha Shmoyis, and the Ramban says two answers. His first answer also leaves a little bit to you have to think about what he means. But the first answer says that part of the Messiah that the Geula is going to come with Pokeret Pokadati is that the first person who says Pokeret Pokadati, he's the real Goyel, he's going to bring the real Geula, and Hashem is not going to be testing you with fake people saying Pokeret Pokadati, and that's part of it. It sounds a little bit circular. Like, How do you know it wasn't fake? Because part of the Messiah was that the first one that says it is not going to be fake. I knew that, wouldn't I say it then? That's more of a reason to fake it. Right? You know what I'm saying?
Not really. Say it again.
Ban's answer is that, no, you can't say that he was faking it. Because part of the Messiah of Pokait Pokadati is that the first person that says Pokait Pokadati, he's the real Goyal.
Whoever it is.
And Hashem is not going to bring a fake person to
so
come say.
Why was he scared to give it to the frog, not to Yizim?
No, so the question is, if that was part of the Messiah, that the first person that says it, and Hashem is not going to, so then if you hear such a Messiah, you heard, oh, this is the first person that says these words, he's going to bring the Geula, right? So then you would say those words. Yeah. So how do you know that was really bringing the Geula? The fact that he said those words, Hagufa, he heard that if you say those words, then people are going to think you're bringing the Geula. But maybe he's lying. So what made them believe that? So the Ramban's question of the Chara comes back.
It seems like that itself is an answer to the question. If the first person was
one cookie.
The Geula, then means that nobody else is going to be able to do that. Even if somebody else is going to want a copy, he's not going to be able to do it before you. Because
not going to be able to do it? Because you can't say the words?
It seems like the first person who says it, that's going to be him. So anybody else who tries to do it, automatically he's not going to be able to say it.
How come nobody said it like 50 years ago?
Because they weren't able to.
Right.
He didn't say
these words. No, he didn't say these words.
He didn't, but he did. I'm alone.
Well,
and that's why
maybe they didn't know that.
That's it all. Here's the Geula, and they went with him.
Maybe they didn't know that.
Maybe they didn't. That's why they went.
Right.
Not everybody thought themselves.
So the second teretz, the second teretz that Ramban says is very geshmaka teretz. So if you think about the story of the life of Moshe Rabbeinu, it's a shtickle tragic story. You know, he grew up by his parents' house when he was a little kid, and then he ended up having to go to the house of Paro, and then he ran away, and then he ended up coming back as an old man, and he took Klal Yisrael out and led him in the desert for 40 years. But like he never like really had shaychus with his family. He was away from his parents. Why did Hashem have to make it that he had to grow up in the house of Paro instead of growing up in his own house? So Ban says, based on a medrash, that this is the reason why. If he would have grown up in his parents' house, so then people would assume, oh, he said Pokadati. You know why? Because he's a Talmud Chacham. He learned Pirkei Avot. He knows that if you say Pokadati, that and then people are going to know that's the siman for the Geula. So they're not going to believe it. So it had to. Hashem made it that he didn't grow up in his own house, in his parents' house. He grew up in the house of Paro, where you wouldn't expect that a kid who grew up in the house of Paro would know about this Messiah, Pokait Pokadati. So that's what so Hashem made it that now that he came and said Pokait Pokadati, now people are going to believe him. They're not going to say, oh, he just saw me. He heard about this Messiah, so he's repeating these words. No, this is the real deal. No.
He knew he was Jewish. Meaning he went out. He killed an Egyptian who hit his ach, right? He knew he was Jewish. He knew he grew up a little bit in the Jewish.
Yeah, he knew he was Jewish. Maybe he ate bagels on Sunday or whatever. But he knew all these different things like this is the sign of the Geula, and I ask a random guy in the street, ask him like, okay, what are the signs for the Geula? Mashiach is supposed to come. What are the signs for the Geula? He doesn't know. He doesn't know the Gemaras that talk about when Mashiach is supposed to come and all the different simanim, the Meitzei Shvius, there's Kailis, or whatever the Gemara speaks about different things, right? Sanhedrin over there, right? Even I don't remember exactly by heart. No. Even if he knew it had some sort of Jewish identity, he wouldn't know all the details about Pokait, like his exact words, Pokait Pokadati. Right, so that's Ramban's second answer. There's a third answer, a very geshmak answer over here. It's brought down, it's the Sefer Bayis HaGadol that you have over here on the bottom. So he says this, and also I found that another Sefer, Tchilas Mordechai, from of Mordechai Gimpel Yaffe, has a pirsh called Tchilas Mordechai on the Ramban. So he's mechaven basically to the same idea. That we know that Moshe Rabbeinu was kvad peh. He had a had a difficult time pronouncing things. Kvad, literally kvad peh means his mouth was heavy. It was heavy. It was hard for him to speak properly. Right?
It's because of the cold. Because of the cold.
Okay, there's a medrash that says because it was the cold.
Do you have any other midrashim speak about this?
I'm not sure.
Would you give a technical reason, not a spiritual, a technical reason?
I know. Yeah. But the way I want to understand it, they don't speak at this point, but I think that maybe this is what they mean. The Lashon Kvad Peh, you could take it literally to mean Kvad Peh. The Peh was heavy. It was hard for them to pronounce the letter Peh. There's Beis Vav Mem Peh are four letters that are pronounced with the lips. B, V, W, M, and P are pronounced with the lips. So Kvad Peh means that it was hard for Moshe Rabbeinu to pronounce a Peh. And so Moshe Rabbeinu, al pi derech hateva, would not have been able to say the words pokoid pokadati, because there's two pays over here. And somehow, al derech hanes, Moshe Rabbeinu was able to say these words perfectly, as if he didn't have any speech impediment. That was really the sign. The sign wasn't Stam saying the words pokoid pokadati. The sign was that he said the words pokoid pokadati in a miraculous fashion. That's what the Bayis HaGadol and the Tchilas Mordechai want to say. Very interesting. There's one more nekud over here about the pay. The Pirush Rekeach al Torah in Parshas Vayechi says another nekud about pay. That when Yosef originally said over this, the Seidah Geula is going to come with pay. So Yosef, the way the Rekeach brings it down, says that Yosef said that I was king for 80 years, like we said earlier in Perek Yud Aleph. We said that Yosef was the viceroy for 40 years, and then he was king himself for 40 years. So Yosef Sach HaKol was king for 80 years altogether. So Yosef says, I was king for 80 years, pay is 80. So too, the person who's going to bring the Geula is going to be 80 years old. And we know that Moshe Rabbeinu was 80 years old when the Geula happened, when he went to Paro, when Moshe ben Shmoyim Shana. So pay is another nukuda. Pay has to do with the years of Moshe Rabbeinu are going to sort of mimic the years of Yosef. It's another point that the Pirkei Avos, that the Rekech in Parshas Vayechi says. I seem to remember that he brings it in the name of Pirkei Avos. This nukuda, even though it doesn't say it in our Pirkei Avos, I think he says it in the name of Pirkei Avos. Fine, moving along. Oh, just mamish one more nekud over here. Right. We said that the Moshe Rabbeinu did, and Moshe and Aaron did these signs for the Zikne Yisrael, and then they went to Sarach Bas Asher, and they said, he did these signs. So what does that mean? So she said, it doesn't mean anything. And then they said, but he said Pokoid Pokadati. And then she said, he said Pokoid Pokadati? Okay, so this is the real deal. So what were they, if they didn't know that Pokoid Pokadati is a simon for the Geula, so then what were they saying? He said Pokoid Pokadati. Why would you think that there's any significance to the fact they said Pokoid Pokadati? All you know is he did these signs, and she said the signs are nothing. Fine, so why are you mentioning that he said Pokoid Pokadati? You don't know, if they didn't know that's the sign of the Geula until Sarach Bas Asher says, yeah, that's the sign, so why are they mentioning it B'chol? So the Zayis Ranan in the Yalkut Shemayin in Parshas Lech Lecha, he says that they were thinking, you know, Yosef said this lashon of Pokoid Yifkoid Elikim Eschem. So they were thinking, well, Yosef said such a lashon, so, and this guy says such a lashon, so maybe there's something to it. So they spoke it out to Sarach Bas Asher, and it happens to be that they were right. There is something to it, and that's a special simon for the Geula. That's what the Zayis Ranan over there, Parshas Lech Lecha, says. Maisa, the Radal over here says that it's a doichik. He says, like, you know, just because he uses the same phrase, a similar phrase to the phrase that Yosef used, so they thought that they should say it over to speak it out to Sarach Bas Asher. He said Pokoid Pokadati. The Radal doesn't like it. The Radal favors another approach, that the words Pokoid Pokadati have a different meaning. The way the Radal understands the Shakla Vatari over here between the Zikne Yisrael and Sarach Bas Asher, so they came and they said to Sarach Bas Asher, look, this guy came and he did all these signs for us. You know, maybe it's time for the Geula. And Sarach Bas Asher said, no, it's not the time for the Geula. You know why? Because it's not 400 years yet. It hasn't passed 400 years. It's only 210 years. Because and we know this golus is supposed to be for 400 years. So that's what she was telling them back. And then they said back, no, but he said pokoid pokadati. Now pokoid pokadati means, the word pokoid means remember. Like, ufakteinu voilu v'rachal, Hashem should remember us, right? V'Hashem pokad esara, Hashem remembered esara, right? But also, lashon pokoid, or like lashon like pikadon, or elef fikudei amishkan, it's also an expression of cheshbin. To make a cheshbin. Pikudei is a cheshbin. Pikudim. Chumash ha-pikudim. Right? Sefer Bamidbar is the book of numbers. It's called Chumash ha-pikudim. It's a book of numbers. That pikudim is the cheshbin. So basically, when they said pokoi pokadit, when Moshe Ben said pokoi pokadati, he was saying, I know it's not 400 years, but there's a cheshbin. Hashem is making a cheshbin why you should go out of the geula, even though the way you see it, it's not 400 years. And that's what they were telling Serach Bas Asher. They're saying, yeah, it's not 400 years, but he said that there's a special cheshbin that we didn't understand. And then Serach Bas Asher, well, he said these words, pokoi pokadati? Okay, fine. So that's already the simon of the geula itself. Rabbi Leomi Izmir says, more al tarach pshat, that stam, that when Moshe Rabbeinu said to them, Pokoid Pokadati, he said, listen, I have a simon for you, Pokoid Pokadati. And they didn't know the significance of that. But they went to Serach Bas Asher, and they told her the different things that he did, and she said, that's nothing. And then they're thinking, also he said that he has a simon, these words, Pokoid Pokadati. They didn't understand the significance of it, but he said he had a simon. And then she's like, that's the he said this simon of Pokoid Pokadati, that's really the simon. And they went with it. But so we said that she said, Serach Bas Asher said, he said Pokoid Pokadati, pay, that's what I was makabala, that's the simon for the geula, and this guy is the one who's really going to lead Klal Yisrael out. And said, Miyad haminu ha'om belikim of Amesha. Immediately, the nation believed in Hashem and in Moshe, and we brought a pasuk Vayamein Ha'am, that they believed in Moshe and about the Geula, etc. Now, I just want to share with you an interesting ha'ara that I had. The Rambam in Hilchos Yesodei Torah, Perek Ches, Halacha Aleph. The Rambam says a very interesting thing, which it seems is contradicted both by this pasuk and the Pirkei Blazer over here, and Mufurish pasuk and Parshas Beshalach. Let's read the Rambam. The Rambam says, "Moshe Rabbeinu lo yaminu bo Yisrael mepnei ha'oses she'asa." Moshe Rabbeinu, the Jews didn't believe in him because of the signs that he did. Shehamayim min abi ha'oses yesh bili bei doifi she'efshe she'asa es belata the kishuf. Because a person who's the basis of his belief is because of a sign, a miracle, in his heart there's a daifi, there's an inequity in his heart, because it's possible that maybe those signs, those miracles, were done through magic or through sleight of hand, and then they weren't real. And if that's the whole basis of belief, then if I could prove to you that wasn't real, or it was done through magic or whatever, then there goes your whole belief system. So they didn't believe in Moshe Rabbeinu because he did these miracles. Rather, all the miracles that Moshe Rabbeinu did in the Midbar was for a certain purpose. And then he goes and explains why each miracle had a purpose. And then he says, "Uva mehaminu bai." Because of what did they believe in Moshe Rabbeinu? It says, "B'mamad har Sinai she'inenu ro'u v'loi zar v'aznenu shamo v'loi achar." At the revelation at Mount Sinai, where our eyes saw it, not a foreign person, our ears heard it, and not somebody else. All these things, the ha'esh, and the kodesh, the lapidim, right, the fires, and the voices, and the Moshe Rabbeinu going all into the darkness, and Hashem speaking, all these things. That's what Hashem believed. That's why we believe in Moshe Rabbeinu. And he brings a pasuk, "Hinei enochi bo elecha ba'avo anan ba'avur yishma ha'am b'davri imach v'gam b'cho yaminu lo'olam." Michlal, so this is what Hashem said to Moshe Rabbeinu by Matan Torah, and it says that when you come, "gam b'cho yaminu lo'olam," they're going to believe in you forever. Michlal, Rambam says, this implies, "shukoidem davar zeh," before Maimer Har Sinai, "loy haminu bo'y ne'monus shihi oymedes lo'olam." They didn't believe in Moshe Rabbeinu, of an everlasting belief. Shiesh achara hiru machshava. Rather, they believed in him a belief that you can have second thoughts about it and think twice about it. So it sounds like from the Rambam that they didn't really believe in Moshe Rabbeinu until Har Sinai. Over here we're saying, once Serach Bas Asher said that, hey, that's the sign for the Geula, v'yamein ha'am, and they believed in Moshe Rabbeinu, and they believed in Hashem and everything. And we say by Az Yasher, it says, when Hashem split the sea, and the Jews crossed, and the Egyptians were drowned, it says, v'yamein ha'ashem v'maisha avdai. They believed in Hashem, and in Moshe his servant. So it sounds like they believed Shalom. The Rambam is explaining that when we're saying that they believed in Moshe Rabbeinu in these two instances, in the beginning of Yitzhak time and over there, by Kriyas Yamsuf, it wasn't such a full belief. Only by Matan Torah did the full belief come about. I think it's an important thing to point out. Fine, let's go weiter. Rabbi Kiva Aimer. Rabbi Kiva says, Naik say Farai Hayu Makin Es Yisrael. The taskmasters of Paro would beat the Jews. Kedei lasas lem teichen levenim, in order to make made bricks, like pre-made bricks. Shenemar, as it says in the pasuk, as maskenis levenim megamer. They had a quota of how many bricks they were supposed to make, and the taskmasters would beat them up if they didn't keep to that quota. Umitzrayim lo hayu noisin teven leisrael. The Egyptians did not give straw to the Jews to make these bricks. Shenemar, teven ein nitan lavadacha. Straw has not been given to your servants. Ulvenim oimim lano asu. And you're telling us to make bricks. How can you tell us to make bricks if you didn't give us any straw to make those bricks? So what did they do? How did they make the bricks without getting straw? They had to make the straw. They had to make the choymer. They had to make the form of the bricks on their own without getting straw. They would get straw themselves. They would go and they would gather the straw from the desert, meaning they couldn't get it from people because people weren't giving it to them. So they had to go to a place where it was like no man's land and find straw over there. And then they would take this straw and they would trample on the straw in order to make it compact, and then with that they would make the bricks out of. So it says they would trample on it with their donkeys, with their wives, with their sons, and with their daughters. The Radal sort of changes the girsa. He takes out the word donkeys and says, but it should say, how you remember some bechoimer. They would like splash on top of it bechoimer in the ingredients. Haim them uneshem of name of neisam. It's not bechamirehem, bechamor bechoimer haim. Okay, it's supposed to be two words. That's what Radal says. So they would stamp on it or whatever to make it more compact, and with that they would be able to turn it into bricks. V'akash shelam midbar hayonekev ikvem, but the straw from the desert would make holes in their heels. Right? We're talking about the Sahara Desert or whatever, where it's pretty arid and dry, and there isn't really much growing, and yet they're going and harvesting all the different shrubbery that's growing over there. And included in the shrubbery that grows over there in the desert is a lot of thorns. So if you're going and stomping on these things, and there's thorns over there, so it's going to make holes in your heels, because you're stomping on stepping on needles. You're making holes. That's what Radal says. V'haya hadam yaitse umizbeises b'chimer. And then the blood from their heels would ooze out and would get mixed into the ingredients that they would use to make the bricks. Fine. Interesting. It gets a little bit more graphic over here. Please excuse me. V'rochel bas bitei shel shusalach. Rochel, the daughter of somebody named shusalach, ha'yisahara laledis. She was pregnant to give birth. V'ramsa b'chemer imbaila. And she was stamping on this straw with her husband in order to make bricks. V'yotza havalad mitech me'eha. And the child came out of her womb, v'nis orev b'seich ha'malbein, and it got mixed up into the things that they were using to make the bricks, And her cries went out in front of the Kisei HaKavod. That, you know, I guess what happened was she had some sort of miscarriage and her baby came out because of the hard work, and the baby got mixed into the bricks with them were making the bricks, and it was very painful for her, and she was mamish crying. Targum Yonason in Parshas Mishpatim says they got the kid got mixed into the what's it called, the cement. But here it says into the to the ingredients of the bricks. Yorad Michael Hamalach, Michael the angel, or in Targum Yonason over there it says Gavriel the angel came, Vulokaches Hamalbin Betit, and he took the bricks with their cement, the betitchalai with the cement that was with it. The Haleo of Kisei HaKavod, and he brought it up in front of the Kisei HaKavod all the way to Hashem, as if to say to Hashem, look at what the suffering that these Jews have to go through. Poor lady was working so hard, she had a miscarriage, the kid went inside and got mixed up into the ingredients to making these bricks, and it's mamish so painful. So I guess the way the Medrash is saying it, so Hashem sort of took the pleas of this lady of Rachel Bas Pita Shel Shusalach and decided, you know, this is when the Gula is going to happen. On that night, Hashem revealed himself and he smote all the firstborns of Mitzrayim. It was in the middle of the night and Hashem went and smote all the firstborns. The Radal points out that the Chazal tell us that it was really a few months before the Geula, they're already not working. And so he says that when it says that on that night, it doesn't literally mean that night that this story happened, that's when Makas Bukharis happened. Because there was a whole tahalich, there was a whole process that was happening from like even a year before the Geula, there was a whole process that started with Makas and everything. Rather, he says that maybe it means that like the year before the Geula, so this story happened, and then Hashem decided, okay, next year that's when the Jews are going to go out. Exactly a year from when this story happened. It doesn't mean balala azeh, mean literally that night, but like let's say that night of on the calendar in the next year. And the Zayis Ranan also says such pshat in the Yalkut Shemayni. So there's an interesting point over here. I just want to speak out. What was her name? The name of this lady? Her name is Rachel Bas Bitoy Shel Shuselach. There's a few different gersoyas over here, what the name was. But our gersa says, the daughter of Shuselach. Rachel, the daughter of Shuselach. Who's Shuselach? So, I don't remember if we read it, but when we talk about the Psukim in Divrei Yamim, about the Bnei Ephraim that left Mitzrayim early, so one of the names over there was Shuselach from the Bnei Ephraim. So the Radal says it could be that Shuselach over here is from that Shuselach that left Mitzrayim early, from the Bnei Ephraim that left Mitzrayim early. That Rachel, this lady Rachel, was a granddaughter of that Shuselach. In the Yalkut Shemayni, in the end of Parshas Shemayis, when it brings this Medrash, so it had there's a few gersoys. Here it says Shuselach. Over there it says either Mishuselach or Mesushelach. Now Mishuselach is a name that doesn't appear anywhere, but and Pashas, if you do a computer search, you'll see that in most places that the name Mishuselach comes up is just partially a typo of people mistyping Mesushelach. But it's an old typo. You find it in old sources also. Someone wanted to say that maybe there was some sort of Kabbalah that he had a different name or two names, or they didn't write Misu Shalach, because Misu is like Mesu, like they died, so they wrote Mishu Shalach and they switched the transpose the letters. Pashtus is just a copyist's error. Pashtus. But there is a gersa that says Misu Shalach. The name of the guy was Misu Shalach. That's the gersa of the Yalkut Shemayni in Parshas Shmois. So the Zayis Ranan on the Yalkut Shemayni says, wait, Misu Shalach? Misu Shalach is from Parshas Noach. He was like Noach's great-grandfather. Grandfather? Great-grandfather, right? His granddaughter? It doesn't make any sense. So the Zayis Rana says two nukudas. This is very funny. First it says, El and I, you have to say that this Misu Shalach that we're talking about over here, it was a different person with the same name. Different guy, same name. Misu Shalach, even though it's the same name, but it's not talking about that Misu. And he says, because by the Mabul, nobody survived the Mabul except for Erech and his family. So how can you have this lady over here? So he said that who was the granddaughter of Misu Shalach. She's not, we won't find that she's from Erech Salih. So he says that it must be a different Misu Shalach. Then he says another answer. He says, no, could be that Misu Shalach's, what was this cheshbon? He said, I didn't write it down. What was it? He wrote that could be that Misu Shalach's daughter married one of the sons of Noach, and then survived, because we know that Noach's family survived, and this is from Noach's family, and then she had a daughter named Rachel, in which case, and this lady Rachel had a richas yamim and lived for like 2,000 years or something like that. And he says that could be what we're talking about. It's a very funny shtickle in the Zayis Ra'anan. Interestingly, it's actually been censored, this piece of Zayis Ra'anan. If you look in the newer prints of Yalkut Shemoni with the Zayis Ra'anan, it doesn't say it. They take out this whole shtickel. But I looked in the first print of the Zayis Ra'anan, it says it, and a few later prints also say it. But the newest prints that came out now, it doesn't say it. So interesting. What time is it? I have a watch somewhere.
20.
Okay. Amar Kadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem said, "Imani Meitzi Es Yisrael Balayla." If I take the Jews out of Mitzrayim at night, Yoimer Mitzrayim, the Egyptians are going to say, "Achshav Derech Ganovim Oso Maisav." Oh, Hashem does like the deeds of robbers. Right? We know the difference between a ganav and a gazlan. I learned this, I think, in fifth grade. It was ganav and gazlan. Yeah, ganav is gan night. He does it in the night. He comes in the night and he steals. It's a secret guy. Gazlan is gazlight, because he goes out in the open. The gazlan will come up to you and steal it right out of your stuff. But the ganav does it in the secret of the night. He tries to hide himself. That's the ganav gan night, gazlan gazlight. So they're saying, so Hashem said, if I take the Jews out of Mitzrayim at night, so they're going to say I'm like a ganav. You know, I go in the middle of the night and we sneak out and we're sneaky. So I'm not going to take the Jews out in the middle of the night. I'm going to take them out in the middle of the day. When the sun is at the height of its power. As it says in the Pasuk, it was in the middle of the day, in the Etzem Hayom Hazeh, Hashem took out the Jews from Eretz Mitzrayim according to their legions. There's another Nukudah. Okay, whatever. The Radal points out like this. The Radal says that the Egyptians used to worship the sun and the moon. So it says Hashem Dafka had them go out Dafka in the middle of the day to show them that this is when the sun has its greatest powers, and look, the sun is hopeless. It can't, the Ra is the sun god. The sun can't help you. The Jews are getting out, and there's nothing you can do about it. And the night they worship the moon, they were getting out. What night of the year were they getting out? What day of the year? What day of the month are they getting out? Tesvav. Tesvav was in the moon. It was a full circle. The height of its power. Still, they're getting out. There's no your astrological influences have no bearing when it comes to Kodesh Baruch Hu. And he says, interesting. That's why it says in the pasuk, in Tilim. Kuf Lam and Vav, it says in the pasuk, what Chazal call Halal Gadol. It says in the pasuk, Halal Gadol. It says, it's talking about the great things that Hashem created. Lo yisin iflis gadol sabadai kilom chazal. Lo yis Hashem b'svuno kilom chazal. Hashem made the shemayim. Lo reik haaretz olamayim. Hashem made the earth. Lo yis yarim gadolim, to make the great the luminaries. To make the sun the rules in the day, the moon and the stars that rule at night, What's the next thing it talks about? Lamakim Mitzrayim b'chareyem k'day lam chazdei. To smite the Egyptians according to their firstborns k'day lam chazdei. V'yayitzi Yisrael mitaychem k'day lam chazdei. Hashem took the Jews out k'day lam chazdei. B'yad chazak v'zorim nitu with a powerful hand and an outstretched arm k'day lam chazdei. You see there's a connection between Hashem having dominance over the celestial bodies, the sun and the moon and the stars, and a connection between that and Yetzias Mitzrayim. The Hashem Dafka took out the Jews in the middle of the day. Interestingly, when we talk about the middle of the day, so Chatzos Hayoyim is not, it doesn't usually come up so much. The middle of the day. There's really, if you think about it, there's Batan in earlier Sfarim, that there's four logical times of the day that you would say, when does the day start? How do you figure out when does the day start? We, according to Chazal, Bnei Yisrael starts the day in the beginning of the night, right? We look at it like this. Either when the sun goes down, or when the sun comes up, or midway between the sun going down and the sun coming up, or midway between the sun coming up and the sun going down. Right? Those are the four logical times when you should start the day. So we, Bnei Yisrael, we start the day when the sun goes down. Vayi erev, vayi poker, right? Bochus, tafbez, and manalof. That's when we start the day, when the sun goes down. The goyim, most of the goyim, start, at least in the time of Chazal, they start the day when the sun comes up, in the beginning of the day. And we also, in regard to korbanos and certain other things, we also go from the beginning of the day. Right? First of the day, then the afternoon and night. The goyim in contemporary times, they start the day in the middle of the night, meaning halfway between when the sun goes down and the sun goes up. The Mitzrayim, says the Or Chaim from Rav Aaron HaKoyin Meloniel, the Or Chaim says that the Mitzrayim started the day in middle of the day. 12 o'clock, that's when the day starts. That's the new day on the calendar. That's how the Egyptian calendar worked, according to Or Chaim. So we see that the Egyptians had some sort of they had some sort of chashivas to the middle of the day. We don't find that by anywhere else, really. They had some chashivas to the middle of the day. We also, when we're talking about Yetzias Mitzrayim, so we're saying that they went out mamish in the middle of the day. We also find that the Gemara in the Sachas Pesachim Daf Hey darshins the pasuk of Ach Bayam Arishin Tashbisu So'o Mi Batechem. When it's talking about the mitzvah of getting rid of your chametz, ach bayom rishon tashbisu shomim batechem, so the Gemara says ach comes to split it and tell you that part of the day there is a mitzvah of tashbisu and part of the day there isn't a mitzvah of tashbisu, and really the mitzvah of getting rid of your chametz midaraisa starts, or that you're not allowed to have chametz anymore, starts midaraisa on Erev Pesach at Chatzis Hayoyim. That's what the Gemara says. In the middle of Erev Pesach, Ach tells you to split it, and in the middle of the day, in the exact midday of Erev Pesach, that's when the mitzvah of Tashbisa starts. Says the Mi'iri in Pesachim Daf Hei. Here he says, why did Hashem do this? We don't find any other mitzvah that starts in the middle of the day. We also find that the Korban Pesach is supposed to be brought dafka after the middle of the day. We also find that the Korban Tamid has to be brought in the end of the day. But I don't know if that takes away from what we're saying, because there's also a Korban Tamid in the beginning of the day. So there's like the beginning and then the end of the day. But here there's something dafka in the middle of the day. What's in the middle of the day? Dafka Tashbisu, dafka Korban Pesach, dafka the Jews went out of Mitzrayim in the middle of the day. The Meiri says that that's why the Torah says that the mitzvah of Tashbisu is dafka in the middle of the day. Because that's when the Jews went out, in the middle of the day, and that's when the Mitzrayim started counting. Not that's when the Jews went out. So because that's when the Mitzrayim started counting their day. I was zeichet to hear from my Rebbe Rav Osher Arieli Shlita when he gave Shirah Mesachas Pesachim. So he took this Meiri a step further. We say in the Pesach Haggadah. Pesach Haggadah, it's talking about the introduction to the Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. So it talks about the Chiyuv of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. It says, Yochom Rish Chedesh. You would have thought that the mitzvah of Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim starts on Rish Chedesh Nisan, Right, but Nisan Nigulu. The Gula has to do with Nisan. The Nisan was when Hashem said to Moshe Rabbeinu, "Hachayish is Elachem Rish Chadashim," and this is when you're going to have the Gula. That's when they first found out about the Gula. So the Gula is started in the beginning of Nisan. So you would have thought the Sipur Yitzchus Chaim, the mitzvah of Sipur Yitzchus Chaim, is beginning of Rish Chodesh Nisan, beginning of Ben Zmanim. That's when you're supposed to sit down with your kids and tell them about Yitzchus Chaim. Talmud Leimer, no. Bayehu. It says in the pasuk, no. Bayehu. V'igad v'levincha. Bayehu. Leimer. Right. But was that also Hashem leave Yitzchus Chaim? On that day. So then the Haggadah says another thing. If Tafka on that day, Yochol Meba'idim, you would have thought from Meba'idim, from not Leil Pesach, but from Erev Pesach, while it was still day. Talmud Leimer Bavur Zeh. Oh, because of this. As for Asher Yeli Shlita, we just said Bayamahu on that day. What was that day? That day was Tezvav. That's when they went out of Mitzrayim. Tezvav Nisan. So how can you say now that you said Bayamahu Yochum Ba'idyam? You would have thought from before. Before is not that day. Erev Pesach is not Pesach. Erev Pesach is the day before Pesach. Why would you think that you should start the Mitzvah Sipur Yitzchus Chaim on Erev Pesach? So it says because we find that when we're talking about Pesach, we sort of work with the Egyptian calendar, like by Tashbisu. We said that Tashbisu starts on Erev Pesach after Chatzis. So you would think Sipur Yitzchus Chaim also starts on Erev Pesach after Chatzis, because that's when the Mitzvim started that day. It's still called Bayamahu, because in the Egyptian calendar, it's that day. Talmud Leimer Bavur Zeh, because of this. And the Haggadah says, because Bavur Zeh, we said before that Zeh is a Lashon of something that you can see, it's tangible, you can point at it. Bavur Zeh, Lo Yamarti, I never said that there's a mitzvah of Sipur Yitzchus Chaim, Ela B'shoshi Yesh Matzor Munachim Lefanecha. Right, that's what it says in the Haggadah. Fine. Right there. Oh, stop. We were talking before about that this lady was Rachel Bas Bita Shel Shusalach, could be that she was that from Shusalach, from the Bnei Ephraim that left early. So the Radal also points out that when Yosef gave the name of Ephraim, so it says, why is he called Ephraim? Ki Ephraim Elikim Be'eretz Oni. Hifrani is a lashon of priya, of giving off fruit. So Yosef was giving haidah to Hashem, and Hashem gave him the ability to give off fruit, to have offspring, while he was be'eretz oni, in the land of his affliction. So he wanted to say that this is mamish, the story we're talking about. This lady was having children in the middle of her affliction. It didn't really work out. It looked like it was a miscarriage, and the kid got mixed in with the cement or whatever. It didn't work out, but that's what happened. It was Hifrani Be'eretz Onu. It was having offspring in the land of their affliction. Fine. Rabbi Yehuda Omer. Rabbi Yehuda says, Kol Oisei Halayla Hayu Yisrael Oichlin B'Shoisin Yayin Usmeichem Uvalim Hakadosh Baruch Hu B'Koil Gadol. That whole night, the Jews were eating and drinking wine and being happy and giving praise to HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a loud voice. That night that they were eating the Korban Pesach, it was before the Geula that they were going to leave the next morning. And that was the night of Makas Bechoris. On the other hand, Hasriim, who Tzayikin Memar Nefesh, the Egyptians were screaming out in their bitter souls, Al Hamagef, in the bitterness of their souls. They were going through a lot of tzaras. Alamagefa shabal aleihem pisan. Because of that, what's it called? The magefa. Because of that, how do you translate magefa?
Plague.
That plague, right? That's the word. The plague that suddenly came upon them. Shema, as it says in the pasuk, patihi tzelka gedela b'mitzayim. There was a great crying in Mitzayim. Ki ein bayis asher ein shalmeis, because there was no house that didn't have a dead person. What? So the Medrash ends off. In the zchus of three things, the Jews came out of Mitzrayim. What were those three things? That they didn't change their language. They didn't speak Lashon Hara. They didn't slander about each other. And in making one the name. What does that mean, making one the name? So the Bayis HaGadol, not the Bayis HaGadol, the Marzu says that Yichud Hashem in parallel midrashim where it brings down the same idea, it says Shleishinus Shmam, that they didn't change their names. They used distinctly Jewish names even when they were in Mitzrayim. So it says Yichud Hashem means like they set aside the name. They set aside Jewish names. I didn't have a chance to look at this when I was preparing the shir, but I seem to remember that there's a tshuva from Rav Moshe Feinstein where he writes that this inyan of having a distinctly Jewish name was only in a mila before Matan Torah. After Matan Torah, there isn't an inyan anymore. But that's what he says means Yichud Hashem. Then he says another pshat. What does it mean Yichud Hashem? It means that they had a emunah in a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Yichud Hashem, we said that saying Shema Yisrael is making saying that Hashem is one. Yichud Hashem, making Hashem the singular. Saying Shema Yisrael is called Yichud Hashem. So he says that maybe that's what it means when it says Yichud Hashem. But the Ma'ariv says no, it can't be that that's a pshat, because if that was the pshat, that would have been the first thing mentioned. That's the most choshev of him. Why is it mentioned last? Oh, my, it sounds like it's the pshat is that they didn't change their names. Not that they said Kriya Shema and they believed in Hashem. That's one nekuda. The Radal says Yichud Hashem means that they weren't Ovid of Edazar. And then he says, we know from Midrashim that they were a bit of a Zar. Psukim Yechezkel, however. So he says, he wants to change the gear so slightly. And says, not Yichud Hashem, but Yichus Hashem. They gave a Yichus to names. They put a special focus on names, like we said before. Yeah, they didn't change the names to use the Egyptian names. We said over here, Shalei Hechlifu L'Shoinim. One of the milas was that, we spoke about before, why over here, Pirkei Avos doesn't mention that they weren't Chashed on Arayas. We spoke about before whether the Radal and whatever, whether Pirkei Avos agrees with the fact that they weren't Chashed on Arayas. Fine. We said that Shalei Hechlifu L'Shoinim. They didn't change the language. What does it mean, Shalei Hechlifu L'Shoinim? So Pasha said means that they kept speaking Lashon Kodesh, right? But I speak about this Barichos in my book on the history of Lashon Kodesh in the fourth chapter, about the Jews in Egypt. There's other midrashim that sound like they did forget Lashon HaKadosh. There's a midrash that says that when a Kodesh Baruch Hu started to speak to Klal Yisrael by the Aseres HaDibros, so it says, Anoichi Hashem Alekecha. Anoichi comes from the word Anuch in Lashon Mitzris. And one of the gersois of this midrash even goes as far as to say that Hashem had to speak to the Jews in Lashon Mitzri because they forgot how to speak Lashon HaKadosh. But what do you mean? Lo yechliv was l'shanim. They didn't switch their languages. So on the one hand it's saying that they didn't speak Lashon HaKodesh, on the other hand it says they didn't switch the language. So you could say that it's a mochlekes between the midrashim, but there's a few other ways to understand this. One way is like this. This is a famous pshat from the Mo'ar Vashomesh, Chassidish Sefer, from of Kalman Kleinemis Epstein of Krakow, the Talmud of the Rebbe Melech. So he says in his Pirush on the Haggadah Shel Pesach on Avadim Ayinu, he says that it doesn't mean that they didn't stop speaking Lashon HaKadosh. Avadim, they stopped speaking Lashon HaKadosh. They weren't allowed, no one spoke Lashon HaKadosh. You go to the Makor and they don't speak your language. Of course they spoke Egyptian. Avadim, they spoke. What it means is that they didn't stop, they didn't switch from the mode of Lashon HaKadosh. Lashon HaKadosh means they didn't switch from being in a situation where they had a holy tongue. They didn't defile their mouth and their tongue by, as what he says, eating macholas asuras, forbidden foods, or speaking things which are forbidden to speak about, whether we're talking about nivul peh, or talking about lashon hara, these type of things. They didn't defile their mouth by speaking such things. That's what it means, lehichlif was l'shanam. But of course, the actual language that they spoke was Egyptian. That's what the Ma'ariv Hashemesh writes. The Rav David Baran, you remember Rav David Baran, you ever heard of him? He was one of the chashuvim from the old yeshuv in Yerushalayim. His father was named Rav Nochum of Shadikar. Rav Nochum Shadikar. There's a street over here in Rehov Haran. It's not named after Rav Nachman Breslov. And it's not named after the Chedushei Haran. It's named after Rav Nochum Shadikar, who was also one of the important figures in the early Yerushalayim. So his son was named Rav David Baran. Baran stands for Ben Harav Nochum. All his sons have the last name of Weissfish. So if you heard of the family, Yerushalmi family of Weissfish, so most of them are descendants of his, if not all of them. But, so Rav David Baran, there's a sefer from Rav David Baran called Irach David. He didn't write it. They compiled different things that he said. So he said, in Parshas Shmois, I think it was, he said in Parshas Shmois, that what it means, it doesn't say that they spoke Lashon HaKadosh. It's that they didn't switch their language. What do you mean they didn't switch? So he says that they didn't speak Lashon HaKodesh, but they also didn't switch their language. he proposes that what it means is that they spoke a certain dialect of Egyptian, which was like a distinctively Jewish dialect, a certain like a Yiddish Egyptian. I don't know exactly how to be marked there, but that's what it is, like a Yiddish Egyptian. That's what he says. That's an old question, yeah, I know. He asked, if according to the Medrash that says that they didn't understand Lashon HaKodesh, so Hashem had to speak to them in Lashon Mitzvahs, but we're saying the first word was in Lashon Mitzvahs. Anoichi comes from the word Anoch, which means love and endearment. But what about the rest of the Aseret Dibros? I don't know. I don't know how to answer that question.
And also perhaps
Pokadati was also, yeah, Pashtus. Right. So I was once discussing this question when I was a bacher in Lakewood in Beis Medrash Gavoya. So I was speaking to a friend of mine named Rav Chananya Jacobson. So I asked him this question. On the one hand, it sounds like they forgot Lashon HaKodesh, because Hashem had to speak to them in Lashon Mitzvahs, and this actually answers your question. But on the other hand, we say that Lo Yichlifu was Lashonam. How do you understand these two things? So he wants to say it like this. He wanted to propose this with Chananya Jacobson. I brought it down in my book. He says that the Jews in Mitzrayim, although they spoke Russian and Kurdish, of course they also spoke Egyptian, because you can't live in a country without speaking the language. So they know both languages.
Yeah,
right? Ramat B'Shemesh, even the Israelis know English. But he says, of course they spoke both. They knew both languages. Rather what? They were accustomed to accepting orders in Lashon Mitzvahs. They're getting screamed at all day in what language? Egyptian. The Egyptian taskmasters are screaming at them, do this, and they're used to, okay, if someone speaks to me in this language, so I'm going to listen to what he says. In Lashon HaKodesh, that's what they spoke amongst each other, but that wasn't what they used to accept orders. So when Hashem spoke to them and said, Anoichi Hashem Elokecha, he's saying, now I'm your master. You're used to taking orders in Lashon Mitzvahs. So here, I'm going to say the first word in Lashon Mitzvahs. We're going to start off. Now, the Egyptians aren't your master anymore. Now I'm your master. Anoichi. It also fits mamish with the words of Anoichi Hashem Elokecha. Asher Yisrichu me'eretz Yisrael. I took you out of Eretz Yisrael. Li'yaseichem l'alekim. I am now you're in charge of you. Not the Egyptians, me. And that's why it started off with Egyptian, even though they spoke Egyptian and they spoke Lashon HaKodesh, and there's no steer between the Midrashim. Thank you for coming.